From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, I know. We do have a great show for you today. We're so excited about our guest on today's show, Chuck Barris, genius responsible for the dating game, the newlywed game, many others. And I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking about this. Will the creator of The Gong Show face his own monotonal music? Well, we'll have to see how he does, won't we? In the meantime, we promise no one's going to ask you where the strangest place is you've made whoopee. So give us a call, the number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Harry O'Pleasure from Manville, Texas.
Hey, how are things in Texas? Manville, Texas? Where's that?
It's a little town just south of Houston, and it's been really hot here lately.
Yeah, well, that's what it's like down there. Didn't anybody warn you before you were born there?
No, not really. Right. Here I am.
Well, welcome to the show, Harry. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of the new best-selling book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Harry.
Next, the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, and the author of the best-selling memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Amy.
Hey, Harry.
Finally, a humorist and author of the new book, dare I say a bestseller? Yet? Yes? Driving Like Crazy, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hey, Harry.
P.J., how you doing?
I'm well.
Good.
Harry, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, of course, will read you three quotes from the week's news.
Okay.
If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Here
All
is
right.
your first quote.
What's wrong with Budweiser? Why do you hate Budweiser?
That was White House spokesman Robert Gibbs doing his best to fend off probing questions about what big event on Thursday?
Oh, that was when the president was going to have a beer with the policeman and the professor at the White House.
Exactly right. The beer summit. Beerapalooza. Whatever you want to call it. Here's a lesson for you kids out there. The next time you cause a national argument about race, have your beverage preference at the ready. The hot-tempered, arrogant professor, the rogue cop, they got to have the beer of their choice with both the president and, this is an unexpected bonus, the vice president, Joe Biden. He often serves as the president's wingman when they're out drinking. By the way, this is true. The day before the meeting, another Boston cop sent an overtly racist email to a journalist. Clearly, he was hoping for a plate of hot wings. Now, the press at this event was kept 50 feet away. They couldn't overhear anything, but
Stopping Joe Biden.
I know. But using the videotape, we did some lip reading, and we have a partial transcript. Professor Gates, you didn't actually expect me to drink this swill, did you? Officer Crowley, if you're not going to finish it, dude, I will. Vice President Biden, hey, guys, great times. Hot man, I love a brewski. Hey, have you guys ever heard me burp the entire alphabet? President Obama, yes! Now, we looked into the history of Obama and beer, because there is a history. It looks like he drinks whatever is popular locally. This week, he had Bud Light, the best-selling beer in America. But on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania last year, he enjoyed a local brew, Yingling. In May in Indiana, he ordered a Bud. In North Carolina, it was PBR. In West Virginia, he ordered homemade corn liquor. In Florida, in the 08 campaign, vodka and Ensure. So we are ready to identify President Obama's preferred brand. It's Panderbrow.
Oh, really?
You people are still stuck in the honeymoon period.
Yeah.
Huh?
Apparently. Do you guys have any thoughts about the beer summit? Is this a good idea, a bad idea, a ridiculous idea?
I would love the conversation involved
like whether or not to let Joe Biden in on this. I mean, can you imagine?
I imagine Joe. I mean, what happened was he didn't say anything. He just showed up at a meeting to discuss it wearing his beer hat, which is the hard hat with the little holders and the tube coming down. I'm like, all right, Joe, you can come. They had the video, and the video was, you know, them sitting there, and apparently Crowley was saying something, and then Obama was laughing. And you know that the, what they're really saying was, move your lips, and in a second, I'll laugh.
Right.
Beer at our house just meant we were out of whiskey. That or it was breakfast time.
Yeah. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Can you call it one-party control if nobody's in, well, control?
That was Rick Klein of ABC News talking about the Democrats' inability to get their act together when it comes to what big issue?
Well, it has to be the healthcare.
Healthcare, in fact, very good. Democrats, they have the White House. They have dominating majorities in the House and Senate, but of course they have one single weakness. They're Democrats. As it turns out, being a Democrat is like kryptonite to Democrats. Particularly the Senate Democrats, by the way, who threw out Robert's Rules of Order and have organized themselves according to Golding's Lord of the Flies. On health care, the Democrats are all fighting each other over details of the various complicated reform proposals. It's really complicated, but ultimately it boils down to whether senior citizens will be put out on ice floes or mulched. More environmentally conscious, liberal wing wants them recycled somehow.
No, you don't want to. Here's the thing.
Yeah, two out of three of your panel are senior citizens.
That's true. I'm a little scared by this.
But you do not want.
You're outnumbered on the stage.
Yeah. Right.
It's you and Amy against the world here.
The Republicans were saying, they were saying, oh, you know, the government is going to come to your house and they're going to ask you how you want to die. That's what the government reform is going to do. And Obama's like, don't be rude. That's insane. He had to address us at a public event. It's insane, he said. No government bureaucrat is going to come to your house and ask you how you want to die. When the time comes, we will tell you how you will die. Moving on, here is your last quote.
In the wintertime, it is the frozen road that is competing with the view of ice-fogged, frigid beauty. The cold, though, doesn't it split the cheese tacos from the sourdoughs?
That was a woman.
Dust I need to say in that. The wind. All we are is dust in the
wind. I want to stress, that was a woman talking about, well, I don't know what she was talking about, but she said it on Sunday as she left her job. Who was it?
I don't know.
Oh, Harry, let me give you a hint. Harry, you can see Russia from her house.
Oh, I know that. No, it's Sarah.
Sarah Palin, very good. Governor Palin, ex-Governor Palin, departed the national stage in the manner in which she entered as if she were narrating her own acid trip. Now, most people had no idea what she was talking about in this bizarre speech, but close reading reveals she was actually laying out her future plans in a kind of cipher, a De Palin code, if you will. We'll go through it, what Carl read. In the wintertime, this most likely refers to February of 2011, when she will announce her presidential run. The frozen road refers to the Iowa caucuses, January 2012. Ice-fogged, frigid beauty, that will be her running mate, Cindy McCain. And the chicagos and the sourdoughs, chicago and sourdough, are the two children she will give birth to before then. She laid it all out for us. Carl, how did Harry do in our quiz?
Harry had three correct answers, Peter. So Harry,
congratulations.
Hey,
well,
Harry.
Congratulations.
Great to be.
Harry, thank you so much for playing. Stay cool.
All right, thank you much.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, a tragedy in space exploration. British authorities say that because of a technical mishap, we may never know what happened to what that was launched this week.
Hmm. They launched something this week. The British launched something this week?
A group in Britain.
A group of Britons launched something into outer space this week?
They launched something up into space, and they lost it.
A big hunk of Wensleydale.
Yes, a big hunk of cheese.
No.
Although it was cheddar. Oh. The West Country Farmer Cheesemakers Group decided to mark the 40th anniversary of the first moon landing by sending a big chunk of their finest cheddar to the edge of space using a high-altitude weather balloon. Now, the balloon was supposed to pop when it reached the troposphere up there, and then the cheese would be returned on a parachute, landing, we presume, on a cracker. But the GPS failed. They don't know where the cheese is. In an unrelated development...
It stands alone. Everyone knows where it is.
In an unrelated development, the mice have jetpacks.
You know, I think the French may be involved.
Really? You think the French have stolen the fromage? Yeah.
Presumably it didn't make it to outer space, right? Because they don't know what happened to it, right?
It came back. It was mutated. It came back a horrible space monster.
Where'd the cheese go?
Where's the cheese gone?
Where'd the cheese be?
Where be my cheese? Inside.
Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Mark London.
Hey, Mark, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Jamaica, New York.
Jamaica, New York. Is this like part of New York City?
Yes, it is.
It is. But you're too proud to admit to live in New York City. You live in Jamaica.
If you say New York City, people confuse you, think you live in Manhattan.
And you're just not going to stand for that.
No, people are too borough-centric about things like that.
I understand. Well, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Mark's topic?
Give a hoot. Don't pollute, you filthy pigs.
Pollution. It's not just smog anymore. As pollution gets worse, it also gets more varied, more insidious, more unexpected. Our panelists are going to tell you about efforts to fight a new kind of pollution. Only one of them is true. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Or voicemail, whatever you like. Ready to play?
Sure.
First, let's hear from PJ.
The merry laughter of little children. People in Manchester, England, hate it. They are making complaints about laughing on the playground of a primary school. Loud complaints. This is unbearable, says one neighbor. Says another neighbor, we can't sit outside. We can't open windows and doors. City authorities have instituted, get this, only in the EU, noise assessment tests to see if the level of children's laughter exceeds tolerable limits recommended by the World Health Organization. Questions will be raised in Parliament. Do you mean to tell me that Marley's ghost can rattle its chains loud as it likes in Scrooge's lonely mansion, but when Scrooge brings the turkey and all the presents to Bob Cratchit's house on Christmas Day, Tiny Tim's squeals of joy will put us in violation of World Health Organization parameters? Yes, says the World Health Organization.
The laughter of little children, possibly classified as noise pollution by the WHO. Your next story of a grimy menace comes from Amy Dickinson.
Hair today, gone tomorrow is a small beauty salon in a strip mall in Atlanta that's also allegedly ground zero for the worst case of follicle-based pollution in the country. The problem started at the beginning of the summer when the shop started a thriving business offering hair extensions. At first, neighbors noticed just a few long strands of random fake hair that had gotten loose and drifted out of the shop. Then, due to an extremely hot summer and the overuse of hair products, these pieces blew up under the eaves of the building, stuck together, and formed a huge ball of matted hair that fell to the sidewalk and drifted slowly away, picking up more hair as it went. By the time the fire department was called, the tumbleweed of hair was the size of a Prius. The EPA says the giant hairball is a biohazard and has closed the shop.
A rampaging hairball in the streets of Atlanta. Your last story of people fighting back against pollution comes, of course, from Charlie Pierce.
The city fathers in and around Moose Lake in northwestern Wisconsin have taken action against an unusual plague that visits their city every fishing season. Worms. For decades, fishermen have discarded their unused bait along the shoreline and in the parking lots, thereby drawing hundreds of birds, which behave upon the cars as you would expect birds to do. In response, the city council passed an ordinance banning all live bait in the areas in and around the lakefront. Cars are now inspected at a checkpoint at the end of a dirt road leading to the shore. "We didn't want to do this," said Ed Colicello, the town's chief of police. "People could have stopped this by simply controlling their bait."
Let's review your choices. From PJ O'Rourke, "The laughter of little children causing a problem in Manchester, England." From Amy Dickinson, "The detritus from a hair salon in Atlanta causing all kinds of problems." Or from Charlie Pierce, "Worms, live bait cast aside, causing a pollution problem in Moose Lake, Wisconsin." Which of these is the real story of an environmental hazard in the week's news?
Well, I would love to go with the hairball. It just screams of B-movie. But I think I'm going to have to go with the screaming kids instead.
Really? The screaming kids? That sounds reasonable to you.
I could...
Don't let me talk you out of it. I'm just want to look into your thinking here.
Oh, I could imagine some crotchety old neighbors complaining about screaming kids, sure.
All right. To bring you the correct answer, we spoke to a pollution expert.
There have never really been any complaints to the World Health Organization about children screaming or making too much noise at a playground. Typically, WHO concentrates much more on factories or transport.
That was Dan Epstein, information officer for the WHO in Washington, D.C., talking about noise pollution. You're right, Mark. You did get it right. The complaints were, in fact, leveled about the school in Britain. You earned a point for PJ. You've won our prize. Carl Castle recorded the greeting in your home answering machine.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Ain't it, though? Thanks for playing with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
What old Oscar enjoys, it's thrill never cloys, it's much better than toys, it's called noise, 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 beautiful noise.
And now the game where we ask people who've done so much about stuff about which they care so little. It's called Not My Job. Now, people sometimes wonder if I had any childhood experiences that led me to this particular gig. Well, it was more of a childhood trauma. I used to be addicted when I was growing up to the Gong Show. That's the weird game show from the 70s in which mostly untalented people did sometimes atrocious acts until they were put out of their misery by the ringing of a gong. Now, the laughing master of ceremonies and creator of this show was Chuck Barris. He also created the dating game, the newlywed game. And I realized watching that show, it's better in life to be the gonger than the gonged. Chuck Barris, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Wow.
Good to be there.
Now, you did so much. At one time, you had, I don't know how many half hours of television on every week, just a crazy amount of TV back in the 60s and 70s. Is there a way to sort of describe in some the Chuck Barris television oeuvre?
Well, I think... what I brought into television was spontaneity. I don't think shows before were spontaneous. They had mostly question and answer shows and stunt shows, stuff like that.
Right. So,
but there wasn't a correct answer to any question that I, what was your favorite sandwich? So, you know, that was all it was.
Yeah, I mean, I want to describe this for people who weren't lucky enough to watch it. But, for example, as you say, at the time, quiz shows, there's a right answer. What's the capital of whatever? You had, for example, the newlywed game. You brought in newlyweds and you asked them questions, and they each had to agree on what some truth about their relationship. And you saw how often
that
they did.
That was, I think, that was probably the best show I ever created.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, all I needed was four couples, eight questions, and a washer dryer.
There you go.
And I was intrigued. that really was, you know, superlative.
Superlative TV. Now, the Gong Show was a talent show. You were the host. You actually appeared on camera. And you had a panel of judges. And people would come on and do acts of various kinds, singing, dancing, whatever, juggling. And it was called the Gong Show because if they were really bad, any of the judges could, for whatever reason, ring a gong and their act would stop and they'd be thrown out, right?
That's right.
Right. And let me ask you, what was your vision of that show?
Well, you know, when I started out, I was trying to find good talent, and all I found was really bad talent. Occasionally, I found one or two good acts, but so I came back to ABC or NBC, I forget whichever network.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah, one of those. And I said to them, let's do a show with bad talent. And we ended up doing The Gong Show.
There you go. Now, one of the things about The Gong Show that was sort of fascinating for me as a young kid was how humiliating it often was for the people who were gonged. I mean, there were some really bad people showing off their badness. And when you think about it, I mean, wasn't that part of the appeal of a lot of your shows, watching people being put in embarrassing situations?
I don't think so.
Really?
I always thought that the people that did my shows, the contestants, were having the time of their life. You know, the lady on The Gong Show who walked out with a box on her head thought that was the most creative thing she ever did.
And wait a minute. She just walked out with a box in her head?
That was all.
That was it?
A box in her head.
She just stood there with a box in her head?
That's right.
Did she
Isn't that
move?
Ridiculous?
Did she dance?
You know,
did she sing?
I just told her, I'm amazed at your act. we had a lady sing Havana Gila and then die. She died right on stage.
She actually died?
Yes, she did. She died, and her husband said that was exactly the way she wanted to go.
Did she win?
No.
I mean, you got to give her some points for that.
Well, yeah. No, I don't think she won.
All right. Do you watch American TV now? Is there anything on TV that you like that you say, man, I wish I'd thought of that?
Well, you know, of course, I wish I thought of American Idol, but I have never seen it.
You've never watched American Idol?
No, I haven't. But I don't think I've seen it because I think I would really envy it.
Right.
You know, that
I got to tell you, the early rounds of American Idol are just like The Gong Show without Jamie Farr. It's like,
it's true.
They're not very good people.
It lacks the gong.
Yeah, you could use the gong.
Yeah,
has anybody ever made the connection and said, you know, these talent shows, these elimination shows that we're seeing today that are so popular, their roots are in The Gong Show?
No.
No, we do. We do. Simon Callow is J.P. Morgan without the gong, okay?
Yeah, well, that's true.
Or maybe Paul Abdul.
Without a lot of else, too.
Yeah, I know.
The gong.
Hey, I got to ask you about this. Of course, I don't know if you wrote the Great American Novel. You've written some novels. You also wrote a memoir, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Great book made into a fantastic movie written by Charlie Kaufman, directed by George Clooney. I recommend it to everybody. And, of course, in that book, you revealed that in addition to being a game show entrepreneur, songwriter, you were also a CIA assassin. And I'm wondering if that helps you get really good tables at restaurants.
Well, I've never admitted that I was or wasn't a CIA assassin, but I'll just tell you what someone high up in the CIA said.
Please.
He said, Barris must have been standing too close to the gong.
Yeah, you think? In my world, it's totally true.
I agree with you.
I think so. Well, Chuck Barris, we have invited you here today for you to play a game for once, and this time we're calling it,
As God Is My Witness, I Will Keep Eating These Damp Little Cheeseburgers Till I Get the Beanie Baby I Want.
Nobody needs to be told this because of all the celebrations all over the nation this weekend, but this week marks the 30th anniversary of the McDonald's Happy Meal, the most effective calorie delivery system since the IV drip. So we're going to ask you three questions about the Happy Meal, its history. If you answer two correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, of course, Carl's voice on their home answering machine, plus, of course, a worthless plastic gimcrack to make it interesting. So, Carl, who is game show genius Chuck Barris playing for?
Chuck is playing for Kathy Murphy of Norris, Tennessee.
So, as you know, it's not the meal that makes everybody so happy. It's the toy. All your questions are about the toys that come with Happy Meals. First question, just this last spring, parents objected en masse to a Happy Meal toy. What was it? A, it was a musical CD, which some parents said dropped the F-bomb on their little diners. B, a clumsy boy doll who breaks a little vase. It led to thousands of dollars of real damages by child imitators. Or C, a Pocahontas doll with what some thought was a shockingly revealing buckskin miniskirt.
Oh, I missed that one.
You know, I've seen your show a bunch of times, and I always figure that the worst answer is the best.
You think so?
You know, so I'm going to go with one.
You're going to go with one, the musical CD.
Yeah.
You're right. Very good. The Kidz Bop CD has the word looking in one of its lyrics, but that's not what some parents heard. McDonald's, in response, told the parents to look off. All right. Next question. On one occasion, a Happy Meal led to a lawsuit. McDonald's was sued by whom over a Happy Meal? Was it A, William Shatner, B, a member of the band Devo, or C, Casey Kasem?
Ooh.
Casey Kasem?
Casey, you're going to go for Casey Kasem, sued. He's litigious. He sued the McDonald's for their Happy Meal.
That's right.
No, I'm afraid it was a member of the band Devo.
Oh.
This is what happened. As part of their American...
Guys with upside-down planters on
exactly
their head?
Right.
Yeah.
Think about the upside-down planter, the Devo costume. Well, as part of their American Idol series of figurines, McDonald's introduced a little figure called New Wave Larry, who had that little upside-down flower pot in his head.
And Devo has
that copyrighted, so they sued.
They stole those flower pots over their own mom's porch.
But nobody thought of putting them on their head. This is exciting because Chuck knows the value of keeping things exciting till the end of the game. Am I right? Oh, yeah. He knows. So last question. This is it. Winner or loser.
This is the key.
The greatest toy ever found in a Happy Meal was discovered by a child 2 years ago right here in Chicago, Illinois. What was it? A bag of marijuana, pipe, and lighter. B, an adorable baby Norwegian rat, which the child kept as a pet. Or C, a 5-carat diamond.
Ooh. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. Ooh. That is really tough. Okay, I'm going to go with... Two.
You're going to go with two, the little baby Norwegian rat scurrying around in there?
Yeah.
It's possible.
I don't think that's right.
No, you should.
I picked the rat.
You're going to go with the rat?
Yeah.
Despite my skeptical look?
Yeah.
You're just going to stick with the rat?
He's on the phone, Peter. He can't see your skeptical look.
I had described my skeptical look to him.
Oh, okay.
I can't talk you out of the rat.
Yes, you did. You just talked me out of the rat.
I just talked out of the rat. Okay.
I'm going to the bag of marijuana.
The bag of marijuana, you say?
Yes.
You're correct.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
How about them apples?
How about them apples? Guy comes to work at McDonald's, says, oh, my God, I brought my stash. What am I going to do? I know. I'll stick it in this empty Happy Meal box. Some other guy grabs the Happy Meal box, puts a Happy Meal in it, sends it out. Some little kid's like, Mama, what's this? And
oh, you're lucky, son. You got the really Happy Meal.
Carl, how did Chuck Barris do in our quiz?
It took some doing, Peter, but he had... Chuck had two correct answers, so he wins for Kathy Murphy.
Well done.
All right.
I could not.
Thank you. Thank you, Chuck. I'm glad, Kathy.
Chuck Barris is the creator of classic game shows like The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game, and The Dong... Excuse me. Sorry. Bonk. Give me a gong for that. Thank you. Back to Chuck Barris, who's also written numerous books, the latest of which is Who Killed Art Deco, in your bookstore is now. Chuck Barris!
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for having
me. For being here. What a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Take care.
Bye, Peter.
Bye-bye, Chuck. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl injects the show with a healthy dose of Rymoflavin. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, newspapers in France are printing alarming stories about a cultural shift happening in that country. Young French women are no longer doing what? Traditional French behavior.
They're no longer not shaving their legs.
I'm sorry, I'm like double negative. No,
no,
that's not it.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. Apparently, tan lines are the new black.
They're no longer wearing their panties? tan lines are that they are wearing their bikinis. They're no longer going topless.
Exactly right. They're no longer going topless in the beaches.
Well, the hell with them.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I'll tell you.
Never liked the French anyway.
Le monokini c'est fini, blared the headline in Les Parisiennes. Metro France led with nude breasts are less trendy, which is strange because they've been in for every fashion season going back to 4000 BC. According to Time magazine, which has done an excellent job of researching and writing this story, a recent survey on public nakedness found 37% of French women say they were disturbed at the sight of topless sunbathers, so they didn't want to do it. However, when asked their views on the same issue, 75% of French men said, "Aouga!"
Oh, my God. You know,
I'm sorry, that was an awful sex craze klaxon noise. I could not do it.
You know, and of course, I just started, so...
Really?
Behind the trend as usual.
There you go.
Yeah.
What a pity. In upstate New York, you're doing this?
It's very
exciting. On Lake Huron?
Very.
You're going to be a very cold young lady.
Very. It's quite thrilling.
Yes. PJ, North Korea continues to rush boldly into the mid-20th century.
Yes.
Last month, the country opened its first what?
What did they open their first? Let's see, because they'd already opened the bomb, and they'd opened the missile crates from Iran. They'd opened those. Kosher deli.
You're close. It is a restaurant, but it's not that kind of restaurant.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. It's not Burger King. It's Burger Deer Leader.
Oh, Burger Jungil?
No, well, what kind of
Kim Burkim.
What kind of restaurant would it be then?
That would be a
Burger Kim.
What kind of restaurant is open for the first time in North Korea?
A burger restaurant.
A fast food restaurant.
A fast food
That's
restaurant.
What I mean. Fast food restaurant. Right. Fast
if
food
anybody had a car, they could have a drive-through window.
I know, but they don't. And what is apparently an effort to leapfrog the population right from starving to morbidly obese. North Korea has welcomed fast food. The new restaurant will have all the trappings of its American counterparts, but it won't have quite the same menu because hamburgers, the word, that's a symbol of Western imperialism. So just as we called French fries freedom fries, the restaurant Samtaesong will call hamburgers, quote, minced beef and bread, unquote. Sounds mouthwatering. You can try one with yellow hardened milk and viscous tomato lotion.
Oh, I could eat. Yeah. Oh.
What's really bad is like that with the Happy Meals.
Yeah.
All they have is little action figures of Kim Jong Il.
Terrible.
Not so happy.
I think in that restaurant they're called obedient patriotic meals. Happy is. Happy? What is this happy, they will say. PJ, a Florida man has applied for a license to sell a new type of insurance. What is it?
Let's see. Well, as a taxpayer, I would say insurance against insurance companies.
No. I'll give you a hint. Filing a claim, do we part?
Yeah, divorce insurance.
Well, more or less marriage insurance. Exactly
marriage
right.
Marriage insurance.
As if you needed another reason to end your marriage, now there's a cash payout. With annual premiums of up to $600, it's a great way to start off a marriage because nothing says I love you like betting $50 a month I'm not going to love you much longer.
This is brilliant. Boy, did I need that.
Oh.
20 years ago. A guy's 20 years late for me.
Claim amounts go up to $10,000, offering men the rare
opportunity.
That
wouldn't have worked.
No. I don't think so.
Forget what I said about needing them 20 years ago.
This is great. It will offer men the rare opportunity to commit adultery and insurance fraud at the same time. We were wondering
about
this.
Except, unfortunately, your girlfriend will be declared a pre-existing condition.
Exactly. Charlie Pierce. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Cindy Chin from San Jose, California.
Hey, Cindy, what do you do there?
I'm a vice principal at a public school.
In my day, the vice principal was the one in charge of discipline, right?
Yeah.
Is that your job? Do you have to be mean?
That's what they asked me to do.
Hey, no. Cindy, can I ask a question? I've always wanted to know. During the summer, if you see, like, your kids, the kids in your school out and about, do they, like, cross the street? Is it a weird sort of dynamic? I remember running into teachers and administrators during the summer, and it was always so strange.
It actually depends on the kid. So if it's a kid who's been frequently in my office, they're definitely crossing the street.
Cindy, welcome to our show. Now, Carl Castle will now recite for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
Unprepared for my Rorschach? I think not. I can master all tests that my shrink's got. My id will do fine to get answers online. Then I'll know what to make of the...
ink blot.
Ink blot. Very good. So, you need to convince someone you're sane. Wikipedia can help. Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, as part of its entry into the famous Rorschach ink blot tests, now includes pictures of the actual ink blots in the common normal interpretations. So now instead of telling your psychologist that the blot looks like that evil chicken is threatening your life again, you just keep calm, you know, check the web and your phone, and say it looks like a bunny rabbit.
Psychologists Peter, are why would I want to prove myself sane? How is that going to get me off a felony conviction?
That's a thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, psychologists are up in arms about this, saying it's the equivalent of posting the answer sheets to the SATs on Wikipedia, at which point thousands of high school students went to Wikipedia to look up at the SATs. All right, very good, Cindy. Here is your next limerick.
For a damaged spine, here's what you do. Eat M&Ms, more than a few. Now this part's a drag. You can't eat the whole bag. Eat only the ones that are...
blue?
Right. Good news for lovers of blue M&Ms. Blue M&Ms might soon be actual medicine. Researchers at the University of Rochester in New York State have discovered that the chemical that they use to dye M&Ms and Slurpees, for that matter, blue, it can help patients with spine injuries. The compound is called Brilliant Blue G. It helps prevent secondary spinal cord damage. That's the good news. Now the bad news, it'll turn you blue. Bluer than Violet Beauregard. Bluer than a Smurf in a sad mood. They also studied brown M&Ms, and they discovered that in large quantities, brown M&Ms can make you fat. Okay, Cindy, here is your last limerick.
On the golf course, there's far too much drama. Let's use pets as our caddies. They're comma. The Peruvian beasts don't critique my release. On the greens, I'll be choosing a...
Llama?
Llama, llama, llama. Yes. It's the hot new golf accessory, the llama caddy.
Cool.
Using actual humans as caddies is so passe. Instead, today's golfer wants a caddy who can help their game by spitting on other golfers from 20 feet away.
Yeah.
Llamas have been caddying at the Sherwood Forest Golf Course in Cedar Mountain, North Carolina for 2 months now. At least one other North Carolina golf course also features the furry beasts of burden on the greens. The llamas go for $40 for 9 holes. They're a big hit. However, as one drenched golfer warned, the llamas are far less forgiving of an inadequate tip.
You know what the other great thing about having a llama for a caddy?
What, Charlie?
You hit the ball into the rough, you bring the llama, 5 minutes later, fairway.
That's true. I see your point. Carl, how did Cindy do?
Cindy was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers. Cindy, you win our prize.
Great, thank you.
Well done, Cindy. Thank you so much. Now it's time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. P.J. O'Rourke and Charlie Pierce each has 3 points. Amy Dickinson has 2.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Down to the wire.
All right, Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, the Senate Judiciary Committee voted to approve Blank's nomination to the Supreme Court.
Sonia Sotomayor.
Right. In an attempt to challenge Google, Microsoft announced that it was teaming up with Blank.
Yahoo.
Right. Police clashed with protesters holding a memorial service for victims of the election protests in Blank this week.
Iran.
Right. According to a study from the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute, blanking while driving is more dangerous than driving while drunk.
Texting.
Right. Police answering the phones at Scotland Yard's control room must now report a code 3 every time they blank.
Police answering the phone every time they code 3, every time they burp.
Every time they use the bathroom. Oh. On Tuesday, three-time NFL MVP blank surprised the Vikings when he announced he would stay retired.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
Is it Brett Favre?
Brett Favre, yes. The United Kingdom's Food Standards Agency announced this week that blank food is really no healthier than regular food.
Organic.
Yes, organic food. Police in Amsterdam are having a problem with the new tiny energy-efficient smart cars because people keep blanking.
Shutting their... No. They keep blanking, falling over.
No, they keep picking them up and throwing them into the canal. Just to see the little splash. Police say what we're calling smart tossing is a new craze because what's more fun than picking up a little smart car and tossing it into the canal? Smart cars are perfect. They're totable. They clear the protective barriers over the canals. Police warn if this comes up and the fascination with smart cars continue, it will lead to even more dangerous behavior like actually driving smart cars. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Oh! She now has 14 points and the lead.
Let's just give it to her.
We have flipped a coin. Charlie's elected to go last. PJ, you're up next. Fill in the blank.
Alrighty.
Although he collapsed while jogging, M was rushed to the hospital. Blank returns to work Wednesday, insisting he was fine. Yeah.
Give me a hint. No, don't give me a hint. Give me another question. I haven't got the damnedest idea.
It's Sarkozy, president of France. On Thursday,
him,
a federal
the hell with him, too. You know?
On Thursday,
if those women are going to wear tops on their bathing suits...
What's the point of living?
Yeah.
On Thursday, a federal judge ruled that one of the youngest detainees at blank must be released.
Guantanamo.
Right. An advisory committee said Wednesday that pregnant women, children, and healthcare workers should be the first to receive the blank vaccine.
The swine flu vaccine.
Right. Ann Coulter was among those who said the continued questions about President Obama's blank are ridiculous.
Well, then he must not have been born in America if Ann Coulter says that he was.
So questions about his...
Where birthplace?
His birth certificate. Good enough. 2 baby snakes caused an SUV to crash after they escaped from their secure carrying location, blank.
Their glove compartment.
Driver's pants pocket. The New York Times...
Why did I so not see that coming?
The New York Times reported that David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez were among the Major League Baseball players caught blanking in 2003.
Using the juice.
Using the juice, steroids or whatever. After he was suspended following a dogfighting conviction, the NFL conditionally reinstated blank this week.
Chip Gates.
No.
Michael Vick.
Vick. Police easily located 2 burglars who broke into a liquor store in England because the burglars were blank.
Drunk.
Right. 2 men. Stole over $1,000 worth of alcohol. They couldn't help but test it. Police found them the next morning, passed out in the yard. But Professor Gates and Sergeant Crowley said they just ran out of beer at the White House and they wanted to keep the party going. So. There they were. Carl, how did PJ do?
PJ had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points and PJ has taken the lead.
How many does Charlie need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Okay, Charlie, this is for the game. Here we go. Spain's Alberto Contador beat out Lance Armstrong to win this year's blank.
Tour de France.
Right. Federal officials arrested 7 people in connection with an alleged terrorist ring in blank.
Florida.
North Carolina. After negotiations, ex-wife Debbie Rowe has agreed to give custody of blank's children to his mother.
Michael Jackson.
Right. The U.S. and China signed an agreement signaling their commitment to cooperate on blank change issues.
Climate change.
Right, of course. And in a perfect storm of double entendre and poor editing, a story about Texas reporter Rita Hooker winning an award from the Kiwanis Club ran under the headline blank.
Hooker wins award.
No. Hooker named lay person of the year. On Monday, the transportation department started its new government rebate program called blank.
TARP.
No, cash for clunkers.
Oh, yeah.
Apple fans recoiled in horror when security experts revealed that the blank is vulnerable to hacker attacks.
The iPhone thing.
Right. 20th Century Fox is drawing criticism for placing a paid ad for a movie in a blank.
In a pacemaker.
No, in a high schooler's graduation speech.
Ah.
Valedictorian Kenya Mejia ended her speech at Alexander Hamilton High School in L.A. by shouting, "I love you, Jake Minor," echoing the beginning of a new 20th century Fox movie, "I Love You, Beth Cooper." Fox paid Mejia $1,800.
Oh, I should have studied harder.
Which is a bargain, actually, for a fresh soul. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needs 6 to tie, but he had only 4 correct answers.
Oh, no.
So, with 15 points, P.J. O'Rourke is this week's champion.
Wow.
That never, ever happens.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that we've seen the Beer Summit, what will be the theme of the next big meeting at the White House? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. The National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors. And CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug, watch out for the tanning machine. Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Bethany Williams. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rye Redhead Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the theme of the next White House summit? P.J. O'Rourke.
And you know, when you ask us what comes after the Beer Summit, we all said this at the same time, but I got it out first. The Bong Summit. And then Peter said, "Well, who's going to be invited to the Bong Summit?" And I said, "Who cares?"
Amy Dickinson.
Okay, President Obama, he's going to call it the Jello Shots Summit. He's going to hold it with Silvio Berlusconi down at Dave and Buster's.
And Charlie Pugh.
Actually, he's renting a boat to go out shark fishing with Sarah Palin while discussing his poll numbers. It's going to be called the Chummit Dummit Plummet Summit.
Very good.
Well, if any of those summits take place, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to P.J. O'Rourke, Amy Dickinson, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. You're the best. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.